I can tell I'm getting older when I realized when I was writing this outline that I had to use a larger font size. It's even worse, it's in bold. I'd really like to address, you know, three issues I think that are very important to me that I think, you know, kind of come together and, you know, help define who I am. I'd like to share that with you. I'd like to first talk about family and community. Second, I'd like to talk about why I get involved in social justice issues. And three, very important, is that I think what's very important to me right now is that I think that the social contract that, you know, my parents' generation, the generation that grew up in the Depression before World War II, that social contract is being seriously eroded right now. And I think that there's a challenge that I think our congregation and I think the Unitarian community as a whole must seriously address. First, family and community. Several weekends ago, I went down to Philadelphia area where I grew up. I had a lot of mixed feelings about that trip. On one hand, my brother and I were relieved that we finally convinced my parents that they could no longer continue to live in their house that they've been in since 1959. I still remember the day we moved in. I was 5, 6 years old. And I went down to help them, you know, clean up, pack up a lot of things, and to help them prepare for the move that will occur in a couple months. And as I was, you know, going around and cleaning up a lot of things, and I went to a place I think all of us like going when we were kids, I went up to the attic. Of course, you know, I found a lot of my family history and pictures, letters that, you know, my grandfather wrote to my father when he was in the Army, and I got a very interesting, you know, education, you know, on my family history. My grandparents, both of them, came from Greece. On my father's side, he came over in 1903. He was 19 years old. 5 years later, my mother's father came over in 1908. And I grew up in a very strong ethnic family. You know, I grew up in the Greek Orthodox Church. Although I'm not a very religious person in the traditional sense, I value, you know, the cultural background that I came from. It gave me a lot of strength and gave me a lot of backbone to help me go through very difficult periods of my life. And a lot of who I am today is largely a reflection of that experience. Well, I think like a lot of people in this congregation, you know, we all have come from a very proud ethnic and religious community. And at some point, you know, we realize that we have to go on for a variety of reasons. As I said, I've never really been a religious person in the traditional sense, but I think that combined with the fact that, you know, I went to the university and studied physics and mathematics probably sealed that in. So I went many years, you know, without, you know, being affiliated with any kind of a community. And I think it's important. I think it took me many years to realize that when you give up a community, that it's really imperative that you adopt another one. And I think, and this fall will mark the 10th year anniversary that Tess and I and Stephanie moved up here. And it's been a wonderful experience for us. I think what got me into the Unitarian Church was largely the birth of our daughter, Stephanie. You know, Tess thought it was very important, you know, that we give Stephanie some kind of firm, moral and ethical foundation. And, you know, I think the values in this church are very close to the values that we have. And I can't say that I came here necessarily willingly. I came here kicking and screaming. When I agreed to come, I figured, okay, Tess will take Stephanie, and I'll stay home reading the newspaper Sunday morning with a cup of coffee, you know. Well, I didn't win that argument. That was very difficult to do. That's a joke, so it's very difficult to win an argument against the wife. But in my case, it's even more serious because my wife studied speech communication, rhetorical theory, and she knows how to construct a logical argument in real time. Needless to say, I lost the argument. It's pretty positive that I'm standing up here, that I lost the argument. But seriously, I mean, this church community means a lot to me, and I feel that I, as a person, have grown quite a bit. The first place that I went to when I came here, obviously, was the Social Justice Committee. And I've met a lot of wonderful people in that committee, and I've gotten to know them, you know, even more as I, you know, get involved in more and more issues in our community and also events in our church. And I really appreciate, you know, getting to know all of you. Second part here is why I'm interested in social justice issues. I kind of alluded to earlier. I was born at the peak of the baby boom generation. And I count myself very fortunate for being able to have the advantages that the previous generations, you know, fought very hard for me. I grew up in a society that was very safe. I went to very well publicly financed public school, libraries, mass transportation, affordable college. And this didn't come out of nowhere. You know, it came out of, I think, it, as we learned a little over a week ago when we had our Clarence Darrow performance here, you know, a lot of the progressive legislation that was adopted in the 1930s and 40s came about from very hard and dedicated activism that started with the populist movement in 1890 as a response, you know, to a lot of the abuses that were going on in our society when our society was becoming industrialized. Okay? And those actions led to the creation of progressive legislation that established a social contract that has benefited my generation and the generations that have come after that. I think we're going through a very serious time in our country right now. I think with the issues of globalization, I think that this social contract has been steadily eroded over the past 25 years. And I don't have to sit here and necessarily elaborate on what these are, but I think we see them in the newspapers every day. And I think that the challenge of our church community is how we engage in it. Now, we come from a very long and proud religious tradition of activism, you know, starting only back from when our country was moving from an agrarian society to an industrial society. A lot of Unitarians were involved in the abolition movement. We learned that Clarence Darrow, whose parents were Unitarian, grew up in Ohio. For over 20 years, you know, was a lawyer who represented unions and labor to help establish, you know, the 8-hour workday and a lot of the regulations and things that you know, make our workplace, you know, more humane. Susan B. Anthony was a member of the congregation that our guest Richard Gilbert has been minister for many years. And she was involved in the women's suffrage movement. Unitarians were also involved in the civil rights movement, and currently they're involved in civil rights for gay and lesbian people. Where are we going as a congregation? Well, the UUA has mentioned enough for a while now that it sees, you know, global issues as being very important, and that we need to understand them because a lot of the issues that are coming up do affect our communities in many ways than we would think. And a couple of years ago, I had invited John Friede, who's my counterpart at the Peterborough Unitarian Church, and also Arnie Albert, to talk about fair trade agreements and how they relate to a lot of our state and local issues. And I think it's becoming very evident that this is probably going to be one area that I think we need to become engaged in. I'd like to read some excerpts from an article that was written by Robert Kuttner a couple weekends ago titled Globalism, Democracy, and the Port Steel, something that we've been hearing about a lot in the newspaper. Robert Kuttner writes an article on the Saturday edition in the op-ed section of the Boston Globe. He has this to say. The Dubai Courts affair invites a closer examination of the premise that the freest possible commerce in goods and services is all benefit and no cost. Let's see whether we are ready to take a serious look at complications of globalism. There have long been national security exceptions to the supposed ideal of free trade. The effort to contain proliferation of nuclear technologies and materials is one, but hardly the only one. The Defense Department and the corporate community regularly joust over just which exports of advanced technology should and be constrained because of potential military uses. The United States has an entirely schizophrenic view of trade and other weapons. It is the largest exporter of arms that is presumably good for both business and for the project of knitting tighter other countries' military establishments with arms. Then U.S. intelligence officials worry about these weapons falling into the wrong hands, which they often do. But at least there is, in the area of defense, there is a serious conversation about the limits of free trade. When it comes to the social and economic policy, however, everyone who raises the complications of globalism is dismissed as an economic imbecile. However, we are citizens of the United States of America. There is no world government for us to be citizens of. In this country, civic decisions are made by the political process, not by the marketplace. Some of these decisions necessarily constrain the marketplace. To the extent that commerce is privileged over all other values, it erodes those other values. As Americans, for instance, we have benefited from a social compact of protections enacted by democratically elected representatives. Minimum wage laws, safety and health laws, social insurance, consumer safeguards, the right of workers to unionize, and so on. When we trade with nations that have no such protections, we run the risk of importing the absence of a social compact along with the products. That doesn't mean we should seal up our borders, but it does mean we should look harder at the terms of engagement. Shouldn't we insist on certain social minimums in nations that want to trade freely with us? Should we allow the exploitation of foreign labor to lead to the battering down of wages and standards at home? Business insists that trading nations respect its property rights. What about human rights and social rights? The question of how to engage with the global economy and remain a secure democracy is anything but simple. The Dubai debate had its share of demagoguery, but maybe it will get us thinking about some long-deferred hard questions. And I think that what we're trying to do in the Unitarian organization is to set up structures that will hopefully engage our congregation in these debates that are going to be occurring at a local and state level. We're trying to establish some kind of a process in our congregation that will hopefully get us engaged at an institutional level, and at the same time respects, the right of conscience that is so important to members of our congregation. Thank you very much for, embracing me into your community. It's been very meaningful.